Topic. It's a fascinating topic because it's so much part of our quote-unquote heritage that to say anything about it almost sounds blasphemy. But I'd like to explain where it came from, what we know, what we don't know, and the pieces we can put together. So the only mention that there is in Talmud and Medrash about a golem, it's not called a golem, obviously. The Gemara says that Rava would create a person, someone else tried to speak with him, he didn't talk, and he said, this guy's a fake guy, he was created by somebody. And the Maral actually explains why he couldn't endow him with the power of speech, and so on. And he dissolved him. That's a Gemara, and that's it. We have in the 17th century, and a little bit later, the Chacham Tzvi writes that he asked a question, this type of person that was created, could you be metzarif him to a minion or not? To which one Rav said, I have a community of people like this, I'm not sure why one person would be a problem, I have a kill like that. But the Chacham Tzvi writes, a person like it says in the Gemara, Rav created, and it was told about my grandfather, Rebbe Eliyahu Baal Shem from Chelm, not the Baal Shem that we know of, a grandfather of his who was a mystic, it was said about him, he also did it. Those are the only two mentions we have of it. The Maral had three contemporary historians, people who wrote history during his time and later a little bit. He had a Talmud named Rabbi David Gans. Rabbi David Gans was a very Talmud Chacham. Rabbi David Gans was a scientist, an astronomer. He wrote history, and he wrote a historical book called Tzemach David, in which it's sort of a review of Jewish history till his times. He mentions the Maral and his greatness, and he mentions the meeting with the king, and that's it. Not a whisper about a golem or anything like it. There's a sefer called Shema Gdolim by 150 years later by the Chida, who really did phenomenal amount of research. He was a gadol who also knew everything about it. He traveled all over Europe, writes about the Maral in the most complimentary terms, doesn't mention a whisper of anything to do with a golem. Third of all, there's Seder Adoros. All of these were things that were much closer to the Maral than we were. Don't mention a thing about it. So that silence is extremely powerful. The first time we hear a mention of a golem is somebody trying to knock it. In 1815, this Shir we spoke about, the Rav of Prague, who was a scholarly person, put out a sefer which had a list of monuments and stones and stuff like that. And he mentions, and this incidentally puts the story of a golem to a lie. So this is the first time we even hear that there was a story like that. Obviously, there already was a legend of some sort in his time about a golem. At the turn of the century, 1900s, I think it was 1905, maybe around that time, a Rav from Europe named Reb Yudel Rosenberg, who was a Talmud Chacham, he had put out different Sfarim that are known Sfarim, publishes a book called Niflos HaMaral. And it has all the wonderful tales of the Maral and the entire story of the golem, the way you know it and you heard about it. Yossel the golem, and he wouldn't talk, and he messed up things, and so forth. He writes that he found a manuscript in the ancient Royal Library of Mainz. His cousin Chaim Scharfstein got it for him, and it was written by the Maral's son-in-law. So here is a book with many stories and tales about the Maral, the golem tale being the most prominent one. Well, I mean, you can't get better than that. The Maral's son-in-law writes the stories about the father-in-law with the golem, so on and so forth. However, somebody, a contemporary of his, a Hungarian Jew named Rav Eckstein, wrote a counterwork called Sefer Yetzirah, which means the work of creation. And he shows clearly that this thing is absurd, the whole thing. A, there never was a library in Mainz. B, B, when pressed hard to produce a manuscript, he couldn't produce it. C, the Maharal, his son-in-law, writes about the Maharal's family, and he gets it wrong. So you figure a son-in-law would at least know that he writes my brother-in-law's. He had only one brother-in-law. He writes about himself, and the Maharal had, you know, this son, and this son-in-law's a Kohen Levracha. He writes about himself as a Kohen Levracha because he was writing. His Hebrew, we have others from it from Hebrew. His Hebrew is a translation from Yiddish. You see the words are klotzy. It's somebody translating from Yiddish, which was not uncommon, but the works that he really wrote, that we have from of Katz, are beautifully Hebrew written. He also uses words that were not invented till later. So the word for a clock was not invented until 200 years later, and here we have somebody predating himself. We have him using a word like machona for a machine, which is only in the late 1800s that word became used for machine, and so on. Many words, and he also describes about the Tosas Yontif and the magnificent Sefer he wrote on Mishnayos. The problem was the Tosas Yontif never published it in the lifetime of the person who's supposedly writing this. So he might have been endowed with magnificent Ruach HaKodesh, but it's not. There's one more issue. He has a story about how the Maharal found out that in the library in London, in the museum in London, they had the stones of the Kohen Gadol there. And the Kohen Gadol stones are there, and through tremendous adventures, he got there and got them from the person, and so on and so forth. It's a really thrilling story, a really, really intriguing story. There was an Englishman 100 years before named Arthur Conan Doyle who writes the exact same story in English. Now, he may have Ruach HaKodesh, but he wrote it in English, and it actually happened. It was a story about the breastplate and Captain Cook going to so on and so forth. It's almost a very translation. So here you have a book that is obviously fake. It's nothing. It can't be.
It was
clearly written by Swiss. Now, the mystery is how somebody. Yes. So, now the question is, how would somebody like Rosenberg, who was a Chashva Talmud, wrote Chashva Sfarim, he was a Rav in Canada at his later part of life, why and how would he do it? And it's kind of mysterious. So Reb Shneur Lyman, who's an extraordinary historian and Talmud Chacham, is really, Reb Shneur Lyman is probably the best there is. It bothered him. And he was in Montreal going through archives. And he found a book that they put out in commemoration of this Rabbi Rosenberg's 70th birthday. And they wrote about him and his works and so on and so forth. And he writes there that the writings of Rabbi Rosenberg are in three categories. There are the halacha works that he wrote on Shas and Shuvas. There are drushes, and there are folk stories that he wrote. And it's obvious what he had intended to do was, just like Marcus Lehmann, wanted to create literature for his kids, for kids in Germany to read. So that instead of reading the trash, they'd read something with a Jewish motif to it. And it didn't make a difference, same with Marcus Lehmann. The stories have very little real historical truth, But they help a kid learn the words, the understandings, the heroes are the right people, the villains are the right people. So he did the same thing. He created a book in Yiddish that would help people, kids read it and so on, and people who aren't very literate read it and get a feel for it and so on and so forth. I'm sorry? No. He published it as if it was like that. But when he listed his accomplishments, his life's accomplishments, that's why it's listed. Somebody in the mid 1900s, there was a fellow named Bloch, This fellow, Reb Chaim Bloch. Reb Chaim Bloch was a quote-unquote researcher who came up with a trove of 400 letters that he found, and one of them was a letter by one of them was a letter by the Maral's son-in-law describing fully, or the Maral himself describing fully all the adventures of the Golem. And here we have another quote-unquote historical work that speaks about it. The problem is, many of his letters were letters from Gedolim, like the Nesivos, anti-Zionist. In other words, saying that Jews are beginning to want to go down to Israel and it's wrong and terrible and so forth. People got to work on it, and they proved that the whole book is also fiction. For instance, you have 400 letters from different people, different times, this and that, and there's almost no difference in vocabulary, and the structure of the sentences, and so on and so forth. Words, anachronisms, the whole, and Chaim Bloch was found to be a totally, totally unreliable person, a forger of letters. There's a sefer out called Forged Letters Against Zionism, written by someone named Weingarten, Moshe Rav Kook. And therefore, that obviously, and he writes, I found these letters, and why would anybody want to forge these letters? They're obviously so, they must be true, because why would anybody want to forge letters like this? This can't be a forgery. You know, as Macbeth, that protests too much. Like why, when nobody's accused of being of forging it, do you write three times over that it's not a forgery? So that also went out. So it's interesting, the Stipler wrote, in one of his forms, he wrote something about the Golem as known, the Golem from the Aral, something like that, the known Golem. And then in a later edition, he crossed out known and he wrote something along the lines of publicly speaking about Mefursim. In other words, not that he's trying to say that he knows it to be true, but it's something people talk about. He was very careful with that word. So I guess if we need to ask ourselves about the Golem, the first thing is the silence of any contemporary of his who wrote his Talmidim, Tosfos Yontif is a Talmud, we know who's Talmid, and people wrote historical works and not one of them even mentions anything close to it. It's very clear. And this, they say, well, they were afraid of government, right? This, it's nonsense. They were written, he don't live in Eretz Yisrael, didn't live in Europe. It's nonsense. The fact that we have zero, anything written about it is very, very powerful evidence. There were stories woven around it, and that's clear. If in 1815 somebody is trying to debunk the stories, that means in the late 1700s some of the stories were already there. It could be somebody had taken the stories about Rebbe Eliyahu Baal Shem, who was the Chacham Tzvi's great-grandfather, and had sort of woven it together and sort of made it interesting. The place where it came to public attention was this Nefilos HaMaral, which is, again, it's a work of fiction for good reasons. It was nice stories, but it had zero connection to any reality. And it's kind of ironic. Like somebody once said, that he made the Maral, nobody thinks it important. That he made a Golem, people think that wow. It's something that's really meaningless in the context of the history. And you will see many statues of Golem here, a lot of tchotchkes. It's obviously a legend that intrigued people. It makes for good PR, and people love. We have zero record. I can't tell you didn't do, but I can tell you the only thing that's mentioned is that he was seen by the King Rudolf. King Rudolf called him, and his son describes the meeting. He describes the protocol of going to the public room, and then a chief minister takes him a next room. He said he overheard the conversation, but he says the Maral, the real son. It's a real son. Like he, yeah, and this is a real account. And he says it's not something of the public. It's anyone's guess. The common guess is he saved the Jews. The probably more reasonable guess. They have a bunch of guesses. The most reasonable guess is Prague was a center of science, philosophy. It was a very, very, it was a very intelligent city, an intellectual city. The king had interest in that. and he had heard the Maral is a high intellect and probably had a conversation that dealt with, he wanted to get to know the Maral as for his brains, which is the right reason to get to know the Maral. That's a plausible reason. That's, of all the things that's written, everything else is up in the air. It's hard to deny something we don't know, but there is no real account of it. That there were many gzeres against the Jews, it's true. I want to add, so that's the golem and all about it. I want to add two or three more things. I know I'm stopping people from shopping at Omer Chaim Zochu, but I want to speak about issues that the Maral face. So we have the Maral being somebody who is this great Torah giant. We have the mystery is why did he keep leaving the city and coming? He wasn't accepted as a Rav until very late in his life. There were politics here. And I'll give you, in his forum, the Maral, besides deep intellectual stuff, speaks about three public issues that occupy and made much space in it. One is drinking Stam Yayin. People were into, obviously, drinking Stam Yayin, not kosher wine. I guess the Tokay wine in Budapest just didn't do the trick for them, or whatever it was. And he writes three, four places. He has long writing against it. It obviously was very, very common, and even amongst people that expected differently. A second item was the way in which they learned in yeshivas. He was very unhappy. He felt they spent an inordinate amount of time in Pilpul, didn't know enough information. And he writes strongly against it, strongly against it, strongly against it. That seemed to have been a major issue that certainly occupied him. The third issue was a very horrible public issue, and I think it's important to share it. There were two families that got into a fight. And one family decided they will take revenge. And they started a rumor that this family, some of the children are a result of some incest, and they're mamzeru. And they smeared the family, the kids of mamzeru. You cannot get a worse smear than that. And it created fights, embarrassment, people were destroyed. What was going on was horrendous. The Maral spoke from the Bima in Prague. His the drushes we have, one of them is dedicated mostly to it. He writes the sharpest things, and then he signs off on a big cherub that anyone that even mentions the word they use was Nadler. Nadler means some type of mark. And they said the siman on the child is that he has a mark of some sort. And anyone that would even pronounce the word, he said, they will put into cherub and curse forever. And it seemed to have worked and put a stop to it. But this was, he had to fight the communal leaders. This was obviously a political issue. Obviously, there were sides in it. And it may have been the reason why he had a hard time becoming a Rav, because he was so outspoken and so vehement. He does not pull any punches in those drushes. In any topic that he speaks about, his sharpness is incredible. So there were real problems. And, you know, if we think today, well, you know, take a look online, you can smear anybody, you can this and that. Every generation has its problems. And this is a horrendous problem of extraordinary proportion, because even a person who's not involved in machlokas, someone grabs me a shidduch, but somebody said that this family's like that. So even if I don't believe them, but why would I want them to cast aspersion on my grandchildren? It's incredible. The damage something like that does is incredible. And the Maral was so sharp and with the strongest cherem against people who would even breathe a word about it and mention it. He said it's absolute sheker. They've investigated it. And anyone who talks about it is put into cherem. He signs off with many other Rabbanim. And it's obviously it seemed to have to put some end to it. But it's you know, even you know, we think of the Maral just in terms of the philosophy and the Kabbalah and that. There was a real community, real people, real issues, and it needed certain strength to be able to deal with things that were as difficult as that. Okay, so.